So let me remind you what I was doing. They said you have a compact complex manifold and you have a holomorphic map or meromorphic map, and you consider varieties of codimension P, you pull them back, normalize, and the problem is to find the limit when n goes to infinity. And one can see this, as I said, as a second man theorem, because you are looking for the limit for every subvariety of codimension P. So it makes sense to look first at averages, and this is what I was doing yesterday. So the first example is the following. We consider a holomorphic map from PK to PK . It's holomorphic, it means that the only zero of this homogeneous polynomial is zero. And then the first thing I prove was the following. Take omega the Keller form on PK, pull back omega by Fn, normalize, then this converges to a probability measure mu, which satisfies F star mu is dk to the mu, but we could even measure how fast it converges, and basically to measure that, we had Fn omega k dnk minus mu applied to function phi converge let C dn, the dth norm of phi, but let me just put the C2 norm here. And if I put the C alpha norm, I get dn alpha. So I could replace here omega k by other measures, the measures nu such that psi d nu is larger than minus infinity when psi is quasi plurisubharmonic. So my next goal is to prove, instead of an average convergence of averages, to prove individual convergence. Before going there, let me tell what's going to happen for when y is not just a point or a probability measure, but as Pitman asked, the hypersurface or something of higher codimension. So, theorem. F is as above, holomorphic of degree D. Then Fn star S divided by Dn minus T phi is less than a constant divided by Dn phi dsh. I can put C2 for simplicity. Here, the meaning of this is that you start with S, maybe I can take with S a 1-1 positive closed current. With bounded potential. Then there is a current T such that FnS divided by dn converges to T independently of S. And we can measure the speed of convergence. Since the proof is very simple, I'm going to give it. First, I take S of mass 1. S minus omega is ddc u, just to keep my notations. And they can normalize so that u omega k is 1. If I take F star S divided by D, what do I find? I find that it's F star omega divided by D plus D D C U composed with F divided by D. On the other hand, you have F star omega divided by D. This is also omega plus D D C V with V smooth. Therefore, we get here that it's omega plus ddc v plus ddc v plus ddc u composed with f divided by d. If I repeat the operation, I get ddc V plus V composed with F divided by D plus V composed with Fn with Fn minus 1 divided by Dn minus 1 plus DDCU composed with Fn divided by Dn. If this is bounded, then this goes to zero. Hence, I can introduce the function g, the green function, which is v composed with fg divided by dj from g equals zero to infinity. And then passing through the limit, I get that t is omega plus ddcj. Since G composed with F divided by D is just V plus G, then I get that F star T divided by D is T. An interesting observation here, besides, I prove the result now because the limit is independent of u, so the limit is independent of s. Okay. I make the following observation that this function g is Hölder continuous. Of some exponent that I don't want to make precise, but which is very precise in the notes. So this is just because V smooth, this is a Lipschitz function, and then you can compute that such a series has to be Hölder continuous, and you can compute the exponent. The estimate I have given here follows easily from the computation on this side. I should say one thing, that a priori, the map F acts continuously on positive closed current. So of any by degree PP. So there is no problem in finding currents which satisfy, which are fixed points for this map. This is just Kakutani's theorem, because this cone of current has a compact basis. What we are after is somehow the most diffuse T, tau. Because the space of currents that could satisfy this functional equation can be of infinite dimensional, and it's easy to give examples where it's infinite dimensional. Okay? And hence again, there are, if I want to prove individual convergence theorems, there will be exceptions. Because if I start with such a current different from that, I will stay there forever. Okay, so now let me say what type of theorems I matter. And the first theorem is the following. Let F, as before, degree D is larger than 2, then there is an analytic set E totally invariant maximal and proper. Maximal means that if E is analytic and F minus S, E is contained in E, then this E is contained there. This is maximality. And this analytic set has the following property. If A is not in E, then Fn star delta E A divided by dnk converge to the measure mu, which is, by the way, also the current T I have constructed to the power k. This is reminiscent of a second man theorem, because we have Dirac masses, individual points, and we pull back, average, and then converge to mu with few exceptions. Since maybe not everybody is familiar with this story, let me just give a trivial example. This is the map in P2, okay? The exceptional set is going to be Z equals 0, W equals 0, and T equals 0. Okay? Any other point you start with, you are going to converge to, in this case, the Lebesgue measure on the torus. In this case, mu is just the Lebesgue measure on the torus. Yeah, actually, that's a good question. In P2, it is possible to show that the set E can be just one, two, or three lines. In PK, the final structure of E is not known, but the only thing you can say is that it's contained in an algebraic surface. It's certainly an algebraic surface, and you can bound the degree in terms of K and D. Can give explicit bound if you want. An algebraic surface or hypersurface? Oh no, it's not. Sorry, it's contained in an algebraic because the set can contain just points also. You can have a point such that f minus p is p, and that's going to belong to that. Well, sorry, that's a slip, but it's contained in an algebraic set that I can bound the degree. Thank you. The corresponding result for hypersurfaces is the following. I think there is E prime analytic proper set of PK minimal. That means, I mean, every component is minimal. In the sense that it does not contain any strictly any other totally invariant set in it. Then if S is a hypersurface, respectively a 1-1 positive closed current. Such that S does not intersect E prime, then Fn S divided by Dn converge to T. When S is a current, then you can maybe I have to divide by the degree of S. When S is a current, that means something you can write that let. You mean that U restricted to E prime does not take the value minus infinity. If I keep my example of ZD, WD, TD, then E prime is just going to be the 3.001100 and 010. This is E prime. Minimal, totally invariant set. If your hypersurface doesn't go through any of these 3 points, then when you pull back, have normalized, you converge always to the same thing. Okay? Here again, the result is not completely precise. This means it's not sharp. You can sometimes pass through E prime and still converge. But it's in some sense satisfactory because the exceptions, if you fix the degree of the hypersurfaces, the exceptions are an analytic set of hypersurfaces. Okay. To describe it completely is hard work, probably. And the last theorem is, what's going to happen for arbitrary codimension? And then there you need other tools, because to compute with varieties of arbitrary codimension requires some other type of tools. Nonetheless, the theorem is the following. There is Zariski dense set, open Zariski dense set in PK in of holomorphic map, so that if F is in that space, you take any current of B degree PP, positive, closed, norm one, then Fn star S divided by dNP is going to converge to T wedge T P times. And actually the convergence is uniform. And with this method, it gives speed of convergence. This result uses what Dean and I call superpotentials. And what we believe is that it's going to be the final method to cover all cases, except for the moment there are some serious difficulties that we have not yet overcome to get the complete picture. But I guess we will do it. Okay, so let me try to explain some of the ideas how to prove this result. And in particular, I'm going to begin with the case of points. What I can do is just explain ideas, because the proof is not simple and quite technical, and actually it's written quite carefully in the notes, so I can just explain ideas. So we know, so the theorem I master is this one, constructing first the exceptional set and proving individual convergence theorem. Let me start with a simple result that I will use and that was proved by Fornes and me in 93, that there is a pluripolar set P, so that for A not in P, Fn star delta A divided by dnk converge to mu. I will use that. Actually, people familiar with value distribution theory know that there are two easy things. The first one is to prove the first man theorem. The second one is to prove that the exceptional set is pluripolar. So if I take phi, a smooth function, C2 function for simplicity. Let me remind you that the operator lambda is F star divided by dk, meaning that lambda applied to phi is the sum of phi ai F ai equal A. This is a Perron-Frobenius operator, dk, and that's the value at A. Then what I did yesterday, then I showed that lambda n phi is C0 plus Cn plus phi n. This defines actually inductively the sequence Cn by the basically we start with phi 0 equals phi minus C0, where C0 is the integral of phi, and keep going. The point is that all the phi n have average zero. Basically, this is what I'm afraid I forgot to say yesterday. We solve the equation ddc phi n is equal to ddc lambda n phi, as people always do in complex analysis. They always solve equation they know a solution of. This is the right-hand side, except what we ask is that we ask for a canonical solution, meaning that the integral of phi n is zero. Then this provides good compacity estimates, and the compacity estimates are what I said yesterday. You can replace dsh by c2 if you want, that it satisfies this. Now, when I look at the series sigma of Cn, thanks to this estimate here, it converges in DSH. Therefore, it's easy to show that it converges pointwise except on a pluripolar set, because you can decompose the phi n on the sum on the difference of two quasi-plurisubharmonic functions, and you have decreasing limits, and it goes well. Hence, lambda n phi converges to c phi, which is mu phi, which is sigma of c n, except on a pluripolar set. This means that exactly this is that Fn delta A divided by DKn phi converges to mu phi, except on a pluripolar set which depend on phi. You take a dense family of phis, a countable dense family of phi, you take out all this sequence of pluripolar sets, and then you are done. Fn delta A divided by DKn converges to mu if A is not in that pluripolar set. So you see the argument is not too difficult here. Okay. So now the problem is how to construct E, the exceptional set, which, by the way, most of the time is just empty. Construction of E. Well, in this theorem, we are dealing with pre-images of points. So what we want is, when we have a point, we have pre-images. In principle, we have dk of them. And we want to have a small ball here and to take inverses. There is, however, something that prevents us from taking inverses and estimating the size and see that all the pre-images are going to have the same destiny than on average. The thing that prevents us from doing that is just the critical values. of F. Hence, we need a way to measure how many good inverse branches are we going to be able to construct. And the good way to measure that is to introduce a current R, which we call the bifurcation current. And R is going to be the sum of Rn, which is equal to 1 over dnk, the image, the direct image of y. Y is the hypersurface of critical values. This is a current. And 0 to infinity. This series converge because what is the mass of this guy? The Fn star, as I said yesterday, multiply by dnk minus 1. So this is just a series like 1 over dn, it converges, so the current exists, it's the bifurcation current. So we are going to deal with multiplicity of these hypersurfaces. What are the multiplicities at each image? And there is a nice way to deal with that is to use Hugh's theorem. He says that the Lelong number of, of the current R at a point X, the set where this Lelong number is larger than C, this is an analytic set. Actually, to be honest, here we could avoid that, but it's nice, so let's use it. Hence, we are going to consider E1 is the set of X so that the Lelong number at X is larger than 1. We know this set is analytic. And it contains Y, the critical values. Let me now introduce lambda prime n of x is the number of distinct orbits, x minus n, x minus 1, x 0, which is x, and x minus n is sent to x minus n plus 1, etc., by f, which are not in y, good orbits that you don't hit the critical value. This, I want the number of this orbit, and I want to count the proportion of these good orbits. Lambda n. So, for example, lambda n is 1 out of union of fg y from g equals 0 to n minus 1. As soon as you hit backwards the critical value, lambda prime n is going to drop. Okay, then the first thing which is obvious is that there is a constant gamma, so that E1 is larger than 1 minus gamma. This is pretty obvious, because if you decrease gamma, you increase this set, and you have a decreasing sequence of analytic set converging to something. It has to be stationary. Therefore, there is gamma. And gamma is positive, strictly. The first claim is that lambda is larger than gamma on pk minus E1. And that's maybe the only idea I'm going to explain a little bit in details, because you will understand what is the role of this bifurcation current. Okay? Okay, let's start with a point X. If it's not in E1, then we have pre-images. We have dk pre-images, which are
what is lambda here?
Thank you. Lambda is a limit of lambda n. It's decreasing. The asymptotic proportion of pre-images that doesn't hit y. Okay, so if x is not in E1, x is not in y, because on y the Lelong number is 1. Okay. And then I can have dk pre-images. Okay? Now I have to count the number of these pre-images that are going to hit y. Because if they don't, I can just repeat. Okay? And the number of pre-images is just the multiplicity of f star of y. Okay? So it's basically new one dk. New one being the Lelong number of R1 at x. So I have this number f, this f1, which is dk pre-images. Which ones are going to hit y? Well, less than new one d1 dk. This is basically by the definition of a new one. Then I'm left with 1 minus new one d2k, because each one which doesn't hit, then I can take dk pre-images. Then I'm left with this number of good pre-images. And I keep going till I reach that lambda nx is larger than 1 minus the sum of mu I. And this is larger than 1 minus gamma, than gamma, because of my estimates here. So the Lelong number of this current R counts exactly the obstruction of constructing pre-images that which doesn't hit Y, and keep going. So I cannot tell much more, because what I can say now is I define En as the set of X such that FL, FGX belongs to E for G between 0 and F minus G, sorry, for G between 0, maybe the notation is bad, and L. I take the points with prehistory in E. In E1, what I have defined so far is E1. I take the points with prehistory up to time L completely contained in E1. And this set E is just the intersection of EL. It's decreasing stationary, and that's the definition of E. It is the point whose whole prehistory stays in this set E1 with Lelong number larger than 1 for that current. Okay? Then to prove maximality becomes just a sort of routine, because if you have F minus E contained in E, you can count the multiplicities and prove that E is contained in E1, and that's it. The next step is to prove that if A does not belong to that exceptional set, which by construction is an algebraic set, and actually the bound you asked for comes from here, because you have, if n is very large, you are not going to be in E1 anymore.
So when you decompose it, a linear combination of hyper surface and so forth.
Yeah.
Would these hyper surfaces give you already the E?
No, you have to count the E is going to be contained in this E1 with Lelong number larger than 1.
So you write down the linear combination of hyperspaces, real coefficient, positive, and look at the set where the coefficient is.
That's delicate, I think. I don't think people have done that.
That's not related at all, or related in some.
It could be. It could be.
Related, yeah.
Okay, so the next step is you have A not in E, and you want to show that Fn delta A divided by Dnk converge to mu. So this result has a history, because in dimension 1, is just 2 points, and the result is due to Lubitsch. And Frère Lopez Manier. In higher dimension, they said that it works for out of a pluripolar set is old result by Fornes and me. Brian Duval proved the result for A not in the orbit of the critical set. And finally, the final result was given by Dean and me in 2003. Okay, so let me try to explain some of the ideas. The ideas are this. One has to construct good inverse branches. What do I mean by this? you have a point A, which is not in E, and then you want to construct an inverse branch which goes to some ui, an inverse for fn. Okay? And then the technical fact is the following. If claim, if the Lulon number of that current at A is strictly less than some small number nu, then Fn admits 1 minus square root nu dkn inverse branches. The diameter of this ui are then under control, d minus n over 2. And if I take any cluster point of this sequence, if it's got any cluster point of this sequence, is going to satisfy mu prime minus mu is less in total variation 2 square root of nu Ra. Okay, so let me try to explain how it works. You have a point A, and you just draw a local line, and you want to define the function g, gi, on this local line. So, we know that we have inverse points here, etc. But then the problem is inverse points are not enough in order to construct the inverse branch on the disk. But the only thing we have to measure is the Lulon number of this disk intersecting the current R, the bifurcation current. If the total mass is small, if it doesn't hit, then we are going to have, for most branches, we are going to construct inverse branches here. And the number of times you hit is exactly measured by the Lulon number of R wedge the disk. So there is a counting argument, but Lulon numbers don't behave too well by intersection, but for most lines, say just in the Lebesgue measure sense, they behave well. Okay? They behave well. Therefore, the counting works, and you find that for a set of positive measures of lines, you can construct for each line inverse branches going on, etc. And you can count how many inverse branches you have. So we have used here a slicing argument. The next step is how to construct GI defined on a ball near here. Well, GI is defined on a small neighborhood of A just by implicit function theorem, but we don't control the size of that small neighborhood. However, this GI has an extension to many lines, a set of positive measures of lines, where we have a fixed R here. Consequently, we can use an old result of Wong and me, 30 years old, which says that if you have a holomorphic map in this picture, around the holomorphic near the origin, and which extend to enough lines, then it's going to be holomorphic in a ball of radius you can have an estimate of. That gives the construction of this BI, of this GI. Now, the problem is you need an estimate of the diameter of the UI. And the estimate of the diameter of the UI is not completely trivial, because what you can get easily is an estimate of the area of all these guys, of the sum. But the total area is bounded, then most of these guys are going to have small area. And when you have holomorphic maps with bounded area, it follows from, Bishop. It follows from Bishop that you can extract sequences, and if the area is small enough, you don't have a compact fiber, and then you control the diameter. And that's basically the idea, how to control the diameter on the preimages. Now, once you have such a precise result, to prove this is almost immediate, because basically most of the points are going to have the same destiny. Imagine they have the same, the largest proportion have the same itinerary, and they stay very close, so the any cluster point is going to be close to any generic. We have seen in the first statement that generically these preimages converge to mu, then it's not difficult to check that you have an estimate like that. Yes?
I want to back up. Yeah. So you start with a point with a lot of good preimages.
Yeah.
And then the first thing you want to say is if you take a random line to that point, then
you can, if you take a disk small enough, the Lelouch numbers of the slices, the total mass of these guys allows you to construct inverse branches on a disk. It depends on the Lelouch number and on the, let's see.
The Lelouch number at the point.
At the point, yeah. The Lelouch number of that current, which gives the control of all Lelouch number of all the, of all the images of F and Y. Mm-hmm. As long, it exactly tells you how many inverse branches are going to hit Y when you take preimages.
Right. I guess I'm fighting. So
and skipping some lemmas. The lemma and skipping, I can tell it to you, it is that that the Lulon number of R, the total mass of R, which delta AR for some appropriate R, which can be made uniform, is small.
Yeah, that's the one, the R.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And on the total mass of the current, but that's under control.
Right.
Okay, so how to finish the proof? Well, to finish the proof, I have to use somewhere the exceptional set. And let me introduce this analytic variety, Z, so that mu fix an epsilon, the Lulon number is larger than Z, than epsilon. Oh, this is bad, right? Epsilon. Okay? This is sort of hypersurface. And let me define tau R as the proportion of inverse orbits till time r which stay in Z. And the lemma that I'm not going to prove is that if I define tau as limit of tau r, then it's 1 on E and 0 otherwise. If I'm in E, all the prehistory is going to be contained in E, and this Lulon number is going to be big. Okay? If I'm not in E, at some point I'm going to leave and then the proportion goes to zero. Okay? Then you can guess what my final argument be. I can just choose alpha, small, such that tau r is less than alpha. And I'm going to prove that mu prime, any cluster point, mu prime minus mu, is going to be less than 2 alpha plus 2 epsilon. So it's going to be arbitrarily small, and then I'm done. But what is the argument? The argument is just this. I start with a point. So I know that limit of tau r is zero. Okay? So after a while, it's going to be less than alpha because tau r is decreasing. Okay? If I'm less than alpha, then I'm going to leave this set Z. If I'm going to leave this set Z, it means that the Lulon number is smaller than epsilon. If the Lulon number is smaller than epsilon, then I can construct good inverse branches and quantify how many good inverse branches I have. And then I have just to count what is the contribution of the part which stays here. And the contribution is small, as proof I have given some intuitive evidence that it works. But, one has to check, but probably I have given, I guess, most of the ideas how it works. So the proof is quite geometrical, and for this type of proof, does not give good estimates. What we can get as good estimates, but using completely different methods, is here. If I take F in this set, if F is in HD star, then you get an estimate of the following type, that Fn star delta A divided by dnk minus mu applied to phi, phi c is in Hölder alpha, is less than a constant lambda n with lambda less than 1 and times phi to the Hölder alpha norm. So you get geometric convergence with good estimates of the convergence according to good test spaces. So let me stop here.
Okay, thank you very much.